Well, good evening. We want to, or good morning, depending on, or good afternoon, depending on when you're listening to this. We want to get into one of my favorite subjects. It's a tough subject. It's not easy for me to talk about sometimes, but we want to get into one of my favorite subjects to study and talk about, and that is the Second World War. Probably going to have 2 to 3 lectures here about the causes of the Second World War. A lecture about the different theaters of the war and turning points of the war, and then kind of a lecture about remembering the war. So I'm thinking probably three lectures here. This is a very big topic, okay? Many years ago in my teaching career, we had people who told teachers, you need to spend 11 days on this subject. I could spend a whole semester on it, but I don't know that we'll spend 11 days on it. But this is a very big watershed event in American history. It's something that you need to be aware of. You know, one of the things that happens on the heels of World War I is that you have an emerging civil rights movement with the Great Migration continuing in America. That Great Migration is going to be really growing and continuing by the time we get to World War II. And you're going to just kind of be amazed at how the civil rights movement for African Americans and women and Hispanic Americans really begins to grow during this time. Every group will contribute so much to the war effort. And Franklin Roosevelt will encourage the United States to become a great arsenal of democracy. And in a lot of ways, we'll become that great arsenal of democracy. But more importantly, becoming more of a democracy meant addressing some inequalities at home. And so that'll be a big thread as we run through these lectures, because you're going to see Japanese American troops in Europe fight incredibly well. You're going to see African American men be called up to the front during the Battle of the Bulge in December to February 1944-45. You're going to see women be a part of the American Red Cross and drive donut and coffee trucks towards the front in Europe, and over 20 American women, members of the Red Cross, are killed serving coffee and donuts at the different fronts in Europe during World War II. You're going to see women do awesome things at home, and in light of working in the factories or raising children, teaching school while men are drafted and go off to war. You're going to see for the first time, really officially, that all the branches of the armed services will form a branch just for women, whether it's, you know, the Women's Army Air Corps or the Women's Naval Auxiliary. You're going to see almost every branch, including the Coast Guard, form a division for women. And so these are just some examples of how World War II is going to change us, okay? So let's talk about causes for just a minute. Remember that America's foreign policy was isolationism. So, and also remember that the 1920s and 30s had not been a great time for democracy. We've talked about that in class, or we will talk about it in class. So one of the things that Americans had to deal with was the rise of Mussolini in Italy in 1921-22. And Italy becomes a fascist country, where fascism means that, hey, the state is the most important, that the individual is subservient to the state. In other words, individual liberties are not important. So fascism was a dangerous, dangerous thing that was growing in Italy. So remember that, hey, excuse me, remember that fascism was growing in Italy and it was a dangerous thing in the 1920s. Remember by this time, 1920s, the Soviet Union, or Russia more properly, had a Bolshevik/communist revolution. So, you know, by this time, power had changed from Vladimir Lenin into a gentleman's hands by the name of Joseph Stalin. And Stalin is going to be a brutal, brutal dictator. But, you know, as we'll see, when the Great Depression begins in America in the late 20s, early 30s, it's the only time in American history when more Americans left America to go somewhere else. And some Americans tragically went in the 1930s, went to Russia because you could get a job. It was communist. The tragedy is that they couldn't make it back once World War II began. There's a series of books out about these people who made the choice to go to Russia but could not make it back. Well, remember, in all of this time, the United States foreign policy is largely an isolationist foreign policy. With Latin America, we had Franklin Roosevelt had something called the Good Neighbor Policy. And think about it, it's like State Farm, like a good neighbor. You know, we're trying to establish healthy relations with Latin American countries. In the 1930s, the U.S. Congress, the Nye Committee to be more exact, had gotten around to studying the causes of World War I. And they realized and came to the conclusion that American bankers and people who loaned these other countries money had really stirred the pot and caused World War I to occur. So a lot of folks labeled these bankers merchants of death. Correspondingly, in 1935, there was something that the U.S. Congress passed, and it was called the Neutrality Acts. And over the next little while, the Congress will pass a series of Neutrality Acts, particularly designed to make sure that the United States did not get wrapped up in another war. For example, one of the Neutrality Acts was no war loans. You know, we're not going to give out any war loans. If another country wanted to come and get some old World War I vessels from us and equipment, they were going to do that on their own, and they had to pay cash. So there were going to be no war loans. If you remember from World War I, the sinking of the Lusitania in 1915 had stirred the country because, you know, 128 Americans were killed on this British liner. So another Neutrality Act was no American citizens are traveling on ships who will be at war. Okay, they're trying to prevent a Lusitania-type situation. Another one of the Neutrality Acts was, I think I already said it, if a country wanted materials from us, they had to come and pay cash. There would be, you know, there would be no loaning out equipment. There would be no leasing of equipment. We're going to see that the Neutrality Acts, like some of those acts in the 1920s, like the Kellogg-Briand Pact, looked really good on paper. But they're going to end up kind of hurting Franklin Roosevelt's ability to, you know, help our allies as World War II begins in the Pacific and in Europe. In 1937, Roosevelt made something called the Quarantine Speech. And the Quarantine Speech basically said to the world, if there are aggressive countries, the other countries needed to get together and literally quarantine and block off that aggressor nation. You know, the world community was not ready for that. You know, again, nobody wanted to see another war. By 1937, most people had realized, including the British, that the Treaty of Versailles, which ended World War I, had been ghastly. It had ghastly effects, and it was too harsh in their view. So, you know, countries will begin backing out of the Treaty of Versailles. Of course, at the time this is happening, this is perfect for a gentleman like Adolf Hitler, who has by then declared himself Chancellor of Germany and is eliminating his political enemies and growing the Third Reich, okay, in Germany. So the Quarantine Speech is a neat idea, but it's just not going to fly. So one of the things I want you to think about is by the 1930s, you have the rise of totalitarian governments. In Italy, it's fascism. It's about the state being the most important. In Germany, it's Nazism, which is a form of fascism. And again, it's about the race and the state being the most important. In Japan, you have something totally different. You have a military war council that's heavily involved in spreading Japan out into the Pacific and conquering territory. And so I like to always say that in Italy, it was about a supreme state. In Germany, it was about a supreme race. In Japan, it's about a supreme empire. And then, of course, the other country to watch, of course, was communist Russia. Well, remember that 1928 pact was supposedly going to outlaw war. Again, it looked good on paper. What did Adolf Hitler subtly try to do? He tried to undermine the Treaty of Versailles. He had remilitarized the Rhineland. He had started to rebuild the army. I mean, these were all cuts and slights at the Treaty of Versailles. One of the things that happened is by 1937, Japan invades China. And World War II in Asia will begin in 1937. In 1938, the following year, Germany annexed Austria. It was called the Anschluss. It was a one-day revolution in Austria, and Austria embraced the Nazis. Also in 1938, Germany, by way of the Munich Pact, is going to be awarded part of Czechoslovakia, and that part of Czechoslovakia was called the Sudetenland. One of the things that you want to remember is this term called appeasement. And when you think about Munich, okay, or the Munich Pact, you want to think about appeasement. Because, again, nobody wanted to see another war. And so it was better in the minds of Europeans, particularly the European leaders, to give in to an aggressor. Not quarantine him like Roosevelt had suggested, but to appease him. You know, here is Hitler's argument in relationship to Czechoslovakia and the Sudetenland. Hitler said, look, you guys messed up. You know, at the Treaty of Versailles, you redrew these pieces of Eastern Europe and you left Germans in some of these new countries like Czechoslovakia. And all we want to do is, you know, recapture some of these places that have German citizens in them. In Hitler's mind, he wanted Lebensraum, which meant living space. Well, it seemed logical to the countries at Munich, Italy and France and Germany and England. Notice I didn't say that Czechoslovakia was invited to the Munich conference, because they weren't. But it was decided to appease Hitler at Munich and give him the Sudetenland. Of course, later on, Hitler takes all of Czechoslovakia. The following year, Germany, Russia will sign a non-aggression pact. Both countries wanted parts of Eastern Europe. Both countries wanted to have a say in something called the Polish Corridor. And they both wanted lands in this part of the world. You're going to see that eventually Germany violates that non-aggression pact. And ends up doing exactly what they did in World War I, which was fighting on two fronts. Well, in September 1st, 1939 to be exact, Germany will invade Poland. Because Poland was a neutral country, France and England decide to declare war on Germany. So, in 1939, the war in Europe has begun, with the war in Asia already being fought over a considerable amount of time. Well, what's the United States going to do? The United States is basically going to try to stay neutral as much as possible. But Franklin Roosevelt is a smart president. The following year, in 1940, a peacetime draft will begin. And Franklin Roosevelt is okay with providing something called cash and carry to the British as the war really begins to go on. Very rapidly, Germany will cut through several countries. By 1940, France has surrendered, and Britain will be fighting alone. Okay? And Franklin Roosevelt very much so wants to try to get around those neutrality acts. So he begins a policy of cash and carry. But over time, the British will run out of money, and cash and carry won't work. The United States and England will do something called the Destroyer for Bases deal. But even then, you know, the English are running out of money, running out of resources. And so maybe in our next lecture we'll talk about how Franklin Roosevelt gets around the Neutrality Acts to provide for England. In the spring summer of 1939 going into 1940, you have something beginning called the Battle of Britain. The Battle of Britain encompassed German bombers who were crossing the English Channel from their bases in France, and they are destined to destroy England. In fact, the German air marshal, Hermann Goering, had basically told Hitler, you do not have to invade England. You know, Operation Sea Lion was already in the works. And Goering basically tells Hitler, you won't have to invade England by land or sea. Our air force will bomb the English off the map. Wow! I mean, just think about that. But it doesn't happen. Because members of the Royal Air Force and also gentlemen from America, including some members of the American Football League, will come to England's aid. They'll violate neutrality, and they will fight against the German bombers crossing the English Channel. This will be called the Battle of Britain. Eventually, the British will defeat the Germans in this air war over England. And as the story goes, Churchill gets in his car one day, and an aide begins to go over facts and figures, and Churchill stops him, and he just says, stop. And he says, never in the history of the world have so many been helped by so few. That's a great line to think about. If you go to London today, you can travel through the cabinet war rooms that were underground where Churchill stayed during the Battle of Britain. You can ride the London Eye, one of the largest Ferris wheels in the world, and as you get up to the top of the Ferris wheel, you can look over the River Thames, and you can see the Royal Air Force Monument from World War I, which also has an inscription about the pilots from World War II. It's a moving and stirring monument that reminds us of the sacrifice of the brave pilots who helped to keep an ally, England, alive. Well, you know, this was Hitler's form of warfare called Blitzkrieg, lightning war, okay? And it's going to work in a lot of places. But when Hitler could not defeat England, it changes the war forever. It also increases American aid to England. And in August of 1940, Winston Churchill, the newer Prime Minister of England, and Franklin Roosevelt will meet off the coast of England. Off the coast of Newfoundland, off of Canada, and they'll meet to do something called the Atlantic Charter. And in the Atlantic Charter, common war aims will be set. Franklin Roosevelt's already talking about some body that's going to be different from the League of Nations that may help with world peace. These guys are already talking about where to fight first and what to do next. I like the moment on the last day of the Atlantic Charter meeting where Franklin Roosevelt and his staff come over to the British ship on a Sunday morning, and they have a Christian service. And one of the songs that the joint British Navy and American Navy, including the two leaders of these two countries, sang was a song called Onward Christian Soldiers. And what you're going to see is that World War II will be looked upon as a crusade to erase tyranny from the world, a crusade to win against and defeat and win against totalitarian governments. We're going to find that Roosevelt will craft something called the Four Freedoms and later speak in January of 1941, you know, several months before Pearl Harbor attack in December of 1941. We're going to see that already by then, Franklin Roosevelt had crafted these Four Freedoms. And I love the Four Freedoms. It's one of my favorite stories. But think about the Four Freedoms. Freedom of speech. Freedom from fear. Freedom of religion. And freedom from want. And as Roosevelt is speaking in that on that January night in 1941, he finishes mentioning the Four Freedoms by simply saying, everywhere in the world. Freedom of speech, everywhere in the world. Freedom from fear, everywhere in the world. Freedom of religion, everywhere in the world. Freedom from want, everywhere in the world. These will be ambitious goals as slowly the United States is drawn into the greatest conflict in world history. Thank you.